Hey there everyone, and welcome back to Med Talks. I'm Sahu Nichani and I'm currently a junior doctor working in the East Midlands. This episode is part of the Finals Countdown series where we're providing medical students with short, succinct and super useful revision talks for upcoming exams and beyond. Today we're in gastroenterology and I'll be talking about Clostridium difficile infection. This follows on quite nicely from our first episode, which was about gastroenteritis, and this is available on all podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Before we get into this episode, I'd just like to take a moment to talk about Wesleyan, who are kindly sponsoring this episode. So Wesleyan is a company that was set up way back in 1841, and they provide tailored financial advice and products to multiple professional groups, including doctors, dentists, and teachers. And I'd like to touch on Wesleyan's latest project called The Next Step. So The Next Step is born from the Wesleyan tradition of giving back. Built in collaboration with final year students, The Next Step brings together some of the brightest sparks in medicine for live events, workshops, exam resources, content, and podcasts to make the step into F1 a little easier. They address subject matter you didn't know you needed to know. So go on over and follow them on Instagram by searching at the Wes Next Step, or Facebook by searching at the Next Step dash Wesleyan, or visit their website by entering thenextstep.wesleyan.co.uk. Right, back to the episode. Let's get started. So, Clostridium difficile, or otherwise known as C. diff, is a gram-positive species of bacteria which secretes toxins that can cause damage, and we'll talk more about this shortly. It is commonly associated with recent antibiotic use, particularly clindamycin, fluoroquinolones such as ciprofloxacin, and cephalosporins such as ceftriaxone and cefuroxime. It causes a type of colitis called pseudomembranous colitis, which is typically due to C. diff but can also rarely be caused by other bacteria such as Salmonella, Listeria, and Campylobacter species. Here are some statistics. So, C. diff infections are actually increasing in number for various reasons, and these are hypervirulent strains, antibiotic overuse, particularly in the elderly, and an ageing population. C. diff accounts for up to 25% of hospital-acquired antibiotic-associated diarrhea. It rarely causes problems in children or healthy adults, as it's kept in check by the normal bacterial flora of our intestine. And it's most commonly affects those who have recently been treated with antibiotics. Because it's a spore-forming bacterium, it can survive in the environment for long periods of time and can easily be spread to others. So those who are most commonly affected are those who've had a prolonged and unnecessary course of antibiotics, those who've had multiple antibiotics used concurrently, the elderly, those with severe comorbidities, immunosuppressed patients such as those with diabetes or those with malignancies, patients who have had prolonged stays in ITU, and those who've had lengthy hospital admissions. How is C. diff transmitted? Well, it goes from person to person via the fecal-oral route, so it sheds in feces. And any surface, device or material that gets contaminated with feces may serve as a reservoir. And C. diff can live on surfaces for prolonged periods of time. So, C. diff forms heat-resistant spores that do not get destroyed by alcohol-based hand sanitizers or routine surface cleaning, and so they can survive in clinical environments for a prolonged period of time. And as a result, once the spores get ingested, their acid resistance allows them to pass through the stomach virtually untouched. They then germinate and multiply into vegetative cells within the colon when they get exposed to bile acids. As a result, the World Health Organization and Infection Control will advise use of soap and water in addition to alcohol gel to limit the spread of the spores. So, a common story with regards to C. diff is an elderly patient, let's say 85 years old, who's admitted to hospital with a community-acquired pneumonia and is treated with antibiotics such as Comoxiclav. Soon after discharge, this patient then develops severe diarrhea and requires readmission. A stool sample shows the presence of the C. diff toxin. Typically, symptoms start 5 to 10 days after the initiation of antibiotic therapy. Most commonly, patients will experience watery diarrhea, which can vary in severity. Some may have mild diarrhea, which can self-resolve, whereas others may have continuous runs for days, which can make them extremely weak, lethargic, and dehydrated. Other things to look out for are blood-stained stools, abdominal pain and cramping sensations, fever, rigors, and if really severe, patients can develop sepsis. C. diff can adopt different clinical states from an asymptomatic carrier to mild to pseudomembranous colitis to fulminant colitis, which is the most severe form and includes a high fever, intense pain, and bloody diarrhea. As always, we need to ask the question, what else could it be? So, differentials could be inflammatory bowel disease, although this is unlikely in an elderly patient with no previous history. Diverticular disease is possible, but usually more localized in the left iliac fossa. Gastroenteritis, other bacterial causes of pseudomembranous colitis, so we need to do a stool sample and we need to test specifically for C. diff. A surgical pathology and ischemic colitis. So those are the differentials. We should exclude them and get to our final diagnosis. So investigations-wise, we're going to need to do the following. Firstly, an A to E assessment, making any necessary interventions such as cannulation and IV fluids, and this will be tailored according to the patient's heart rate and blood pressure, which will determine the need for resuscitation fluids or replacement fluids. Whilst cannulating, it's a good idea to take a set of bloods, so a full blood count may show an elevated white cell, low hemoglobin if there's blood in the stools, and raised neutrophils, in other words, signs of infection. Urea and electrolytes will show any sign of acute renal failure with a raised creatinine and urea and a low GFR. And it's always important to compare with the patient's baseline and assess the change. A CRP may be high, and this is a good marker of inflammation. And also it's good to look at the albumin level, because patients with C. diff may have low albumin levels or hypoalbuminemia, because this is a protein-losing condition. A stool sample is needed, so ideally repeat testing on three samples is recommended, and we're looking for the cytotoxin. So C. diff produces multiple toxins. The best known ones are the enterotoxin, or C. diff toxin A, and the cytotoxin, or C. diff toxin B, which causes the diarrhea and the inflammation. In terms of imaging, patients will need an abdominal X-ray, and this will help us to look for any sign of perforation and rule out a toxic megacolon. Toxic megacolon is a rare but life-threatening complication of severe colonic infection and pathology. It's acute toxic colitis with dilatation of the colon, and the features are abdominal distension, fever, abdominal pain with possible shock. And this can be detected on a plain abdominal X-ray film. And you can head on over to our Instagram page, which is medtalks.uk, to have a look at some images of a toxic megacolon. I'd like to now touch on the management of C. diff. So C. diff is a notifiable disease and it must be reported to Public Health England or an equivalent agency. So, those who are aged 2 years and above with diarrhea stools where the specimen is C. diff toxin positive must be notified to Public Health England. Those who have got toxic megacolon where the specimen is C. diff toxin positive. Patients who've got colonic histopathology, which is characteristic of C. diff infection, on a specimen that's been obtained during endoscopy or a colectomy. And those who've got fecal specimens, which are collected post-mortem, where the specimen is C. diff toxin positive. These need to be notified to Public Health England. In terms of the medical management, so we should correct fluid losses or any electrolyte imbalance with either oral or IV replacement. Peristaltic agents such as loperamide should be avoided because of the risk of retaining these toxins within the lumen. If we have a known causative agent such as a causative antibiotic, then we should definitely stop that, which can help to resolve the symptoms. And we need to treat this with antibiotics. And the most commonly used antibiotics for C. diff are metronidazole and vancomycin. They are the mainstays of therapy. And it's the best thing to do would be to consult the local guidelines to see which one is preferred. Usually, vancomycin is a drug of choice for severe C. diff infection. So that's the medical management. In patients who have acute severe colitis, which is failing to respond to treatment, or they have signs of an acute surgical abdomen, or radiological signs, or a raising white cell count despite antibiotic treatment, or raising lactate, then surgery may be life-saving. And the procedure of choice for patients who require surgery for severe colitis or toxic megacolon is a subtotal colectomy. So that's removal of the colon, leaving the rectum in situ, with an end ileostomy. And the criteria for diagnosis of severe colitis is stool frequency of greater more than 6 in 24 hours, and at least one of the following, so heart rate of greater than 90, a temperature greater than 37.8, hemoglobin less than 10.5, or an ESR greater than 30. In terms of the prognosis, in healthy individuals, a good response to treatment usually is expected, but the illness can cause severe debility and lengthy hospital stays. Recurrent colitis and diarrhea can occur in around 25% of patients, and it's really important that C. diff is detected early and therapy is initiated promptly to minimize morbidity and mortality. In terms of the complications of severe C. diff colitis, these can be dehydration, electrolyte imbalances, toxic megacolon, bowel perforation, and sepsis and shock. And extra-intestinal manifestations are rare, but they may include things like reactive arthritis, osteomyelitis, a splenic abscess, and tenosynovitis. Preventative measures such as strict hand washing, patient isolation for those patients with diarrhea seem to be effective. And hand washing with soap and water is the best, and avoid and not just washing with alcohol gels, because this does not kill the spores. So that brings me to the end of today's episode. We've talked about the C. diff infection, we've talked about what Clostridium difficile is, how it spreads from person to person, the features patients may present with, how we might diagnose it, and then the management and potential complications. We've also looked at how we can prevent C. diff from spreading. I hope you've enjoyed this talk and found it useful. Please remember to give us your feedback by posting a comment on the Apple Podcast page and leave us a review. Share these episodes with your friends and your peers who may also find them useful, and check out all of our other episodes in the Finals Countdown series, where we've gone through cardiology, neurology, respiratory, and ophthalmology. We've got plenty more episodes coming up in the gastroenterology section, so stay tuned for those. Good luck with your revision, and we'll see you in the next one. Goodbye.